Welcome to Sample Size. My name is Noelle, and I'm here with my co-host, Tone.
That's me.
And on this episode, we're going to be talking about our favorite shows from Fashion Month, discussing Andre Leon Talley's financial issues, and we're putting resellers on trial for all crimes against sneakerheads. You ready, Tone?
Let's get it. Hey, Noel. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I was going to say I'm doing all right, but I'm not going to lie. I'm a little vexed right now. I'm going to tell you why I'm vexed, right?
Go ahead.
You know what grinds my gears, honestly and truly?
Okay.
Freaking speed camera. The speed camera, the 25 mile per hour cameras. Because
mm-hmm.
to me, I feel like the way that the system, especially in New York City, has it set up,
mm-hmm.
is like, it's so predatory. It's like they're trying to set me up. It's no way there should be 3 25 miles per hour cameras within a 1.5 mile stretch. Like, it doesn't even make sense to me. It's like, are you really trying to slow people down, or are you just trying to jam people up? And to me, the answer is simple. They're trying to, you know, especially, I mean, I don't, I'm, I, it was already set up before COVID, but now with COVID, I know mm-hmm. they're going extra hard with the freaking cameras trying to get people. And it's just like, and the funny thing is, I didn't even get a ticket yet, but I just felt like today I'm going to get a ticket because I was driving here. My freaking GPS was telling me about, oh, slow down. And I was slowed down, but my energy is not sitting right. I just feel like I got one. And that's why I'm really angry right now. I'm a little off kilter.
I'm very glad that you got that off your chest. But
I needed to get that off my chest.
As the non-driving person in this duo,
right?
I just want to say welcome to Sample Size episode 3.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to Sample Size.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're doing. We're doing a podcast. I forgot about that. My bad. I just had to get that off my chest.
No, I understand. Again, I don't drive. Mm-hmm. I got my license at 19 years old, so can't relate. But
yeah.
I'm glad you got that off your chest.
I mean, driving is nice and like the privilege it gives me, but it's just like, should be getting me vexed, to be honest.
I understand.
How about you, though? Anything going on in your life? How you been?
I'm good. These 2 weeks have been productive, chill. The weather is nice, so I'm ready to
be. Last week was tight brick.
Last week was nice. All the sun.
Oh, I mean, I guess because I mainly go out in the morning, and it's like when I'm on my way to the gym.
Oh, no.
And
it was like great out.
The real feel was like in the teens a couple of days, and I was just like, I would run to the car and all that.
I felt the summer energy like right around the corner.
Tell me about it, yeah.
It felt good.
I really can't wait. The spring equinox coming out, that means the sun about to be setting later and later.
Spring equinox. Oh, days are longer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
got it.
It's going to be a very hectic summer,
especially
with everybody cooped up inside.
Right now, invite me to all your functions because I'm actually
going to
come.
And I'm vaccinated, so I'm mixing
it up. Oh, I forgot. I got my first
thing
of the Moderna.
Uh-huh. Oh,
I'm excited.
Moderna,
I'm going to carry my card around. Like, I'm going to glue that shit to
like,
my
I'm
forehead.
I'm vaccinated, baby.
I'm excited. We outside. For sure.
I say all this. Watch me. I'll be in a crib all summer. Hell
but
no.
Yeah,
no,
absolutely.
No. This is not the summer to be in the crib.
Don't put that in the energy.
I'm gonna average about 2 hours of sleep this summer between working hard and just trying to enjoy life.
Who the fuck needs rest?
I was resting enough all this quarantine, man.
Exactly.
Honestly, truly.
So, for episode 3 of Sample Size Podcast, we are going to get into a couple of
what
things.
We're getting into.
Yes, so we're at the end of Fashion Month. Mm-hmm. We've had the couture shows. We've had New York Fashion Week. We've had London Fashion Week.
Right.
So we're going to go over some of our favorites and some flops, but we're going to try to keep it as positive as possible.
Then we're going to go over
some fashion news. There's been a couple of developments in the fashion industry, a lot of buzz on social media, so we're going to hit those too.
All right, no problem. So how about you start it off? What was your favorite show of the season, or however you want to dictate it?
Yeah, so, you know, because of COVID, actual physical shows have been pretty decreased, and obviously there's not a lot of audiences.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't even following the fashion calendar necessarily anymore, so it kind of just feels like we're getting things back to back to back to back.
Right.
But we did get some good collections out of Fashion Month.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have to say that my favorite was probably, and excuse me on the name, is Prabal Gurung.
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 Oh, I never heard of what Where are they based in?
They've been around for a while. Mm-hmm. It's not a new house at all. Mm-hmm. I just think, so there's been a couple of houses that have been like kind of had a resurgence, and they're one of them, mm-hmm. particularly because this was a house that was popular in the 80s. And yeah. I believe mm-hmm. this ready to wear collection was really spot on because they kind of dug into that 80s aesthetic.
Right.
I think you might have seen some of these photos on social media because they kind of went viral. It's the collection that was very simply shot. It was just like a white background, but there were really all these beautiful like statement red, black and white pieces.
I missed this.
Oversized red suits and really great like 80s styling, a lot of like corsetry, a lot of polka dots. Surprisingly, they made polka dots really interesting, which I don't really lean towards patterns in like my personal taste, but I like the way it was done.
No worries.
And I think the best part about this collection was, I know like a lot of ready to wear collections are in theory meant to be commercial, but in reality these houses are trying to sell shoes and bags, so the clothes aren't really that commercial. But mm-hmm. for this collection, they were like extremely accessible and designed in a way where I could see them scaled up on bigger bodies or smaller bodies. So I enjoy that a lot.
But the question is, do you really think they're going to produce it for bigger bodies?
Not for bigger bodies. Okay. But I'm allowing myself to not be bitter about that because...
No, please be bitter. That's the only way they're going to listen.
I have even logic with your minute
voice, you have to keep screaming for them to change.
I know.
If nobody else is screaming, it's not going
to
happen.
Side note, I just have to shout out Precious Lee because my fucking bitch.
She's like, definitely been killing it.
I love her so much. She just landed a Vogue UK cover wearing Christopher John Rogers.
I think that's what, yeah,
dope black designer shot by Steven Meisel, mm-hmm. I believe his name is. And I just like, she really puts on for like the thick girls in a way that's like so uplifting and inspiring, but that's a total side rant. I was gonna say that mm-hmm. I'm not bitter about these clothes not being put in production for bigger sizes because of COVID. And like, okay, I'm not bitter about it because of COVID, collections period aren't being put in production anymore. So it's like, okay, now you skinny old rich white women will understand how like everyone else feels because you're not going to be able to get your clothes either mm-hmm. because they're not being manufactured.
So then how do you think, what are we going to see as a result of this?
I think we're going to see a doubling down on the importance of accessories. And then we're going to see a lot of celebrities
in terms of, wait, before you continue, I'm sorry to cut you off, even though I cut you off, but, accessories in terms of like, that's going to be a trend or like more houses are going to be trying to focus more on accessories.
We're going to see, so the collections will still obviously be primarily about the clothes, but we're going to see a lot more campaigns centered around shoes and bags because those are what are going to immediately get these houses out of the financial bind that True. They are in because okay. of COVID. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Prada just launched the Cleo bag. Mm-hmm. And I've been seeing...
Is that the big one?
It comes in a huge size. It's okay. like a very sleek looking... It's almost like a sleeker version of the saddle bag. It's okay. like a very brushed leather looking bag. And I've been just seeing so many advertisements for shoes and bags specifically working. And I think that these companies are doubling down on that just to make sure like these fashion houses aren't going bottom up
pieces and sneakers and whatnot. But you know, this, because of this podcast one and plus of my interest of trying to just evolve as a person, I decided to pay more attention to this fashion season. Good. And I noticed that, you know, I do have like a style and just obviously I've talked about how I like minimalist things.
Right.
But what I enjoyed about the Ferragamo show was just like, I don't know, even though it wasn't, I could feel like it was good quality stuff.
Right.
And it was in styles that were like not too attention grabby.
Yeah.
But it was just, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. I just like things when I like things, and it just like fit. It was like, it Maybe not for me, but for the models.
Well, I'm looking at the collection now, and I do say it's like, it's clean, and the colors that the palette that they use, I would describe as like refreshing.
Yeah,
there we go. With these mints and blues. So they have my girl Paloma in there. So shout out to the thick bitches. Let me not call her a thick bitch, but shout out to them thickies. Yeah, this leather dress that she's wearing is beautifully tailored, and I like the lines as well. So this is cute. I haven't looked at Ferragamo ever. Because
why not?
Those belts that niggas used to wear gave me PTSD. Yeah. But this is beautiful. This is sexy. This is giving me like South of France, you know.
Exactly. Picnicking. See, that's the thing. And this is not for this episode, but like just looking into like just, you know, all the inspiration of the houses, because I'm not, as you guys know, I'm not familiar with all that, but just learning about it. And then it's just like, I'm looking at this piece now. I know we can't show you, but it's just like, I don't know how to describe it. It's just modern day, but still,
yeah,
right. And it's just like,
they said their inspiration. I'm reading the little write up on Vogue Runway, and they said that their inspiration was Alfred Hitchcock. So like the birds and stuff like
that. Okay, that makes sense.
I can see that almost in like the sunglasses and the accessories, because it does kind of have that older era feel.
And do you see this green coat? I don't know if you're still on Vogue Runway, but there's one green like leather. It looks like leather, and it's just beautiful.
With the matching pants in the bag.
So it was just like, if I had money and I had clout, I would definitely find a way to acquire clout. Yeah, because you know,
I'm really enjoying like monochromatic looks with a little bit of color blocking, especially for men, because I feel like a lot of men, that's like the extent of their personal style, is matching like their t-shirt color with their sneakers. So I think that's like a really easy way for a man to advance his personal style, is to kind of get into more monochromatic looks. And then instead of just like straight up matching your t-shirt with a Nike swoop color, introducing like secondary colors in like a t-shirt or like a pair of sunglasses or something like that. So it's dope. Like, you don't have to actually wear the pieces from a collection, but you can take hints from how they style a collection and incorporate that into your personal wardrobe.
I appreciate that. Not that I didn't know that already, but just hearing you say that, it just unlocks something mentally, you know. You know, you gotta hear something, but yeah, you're right. You know, I mean, not that I'm saying that I was never like a super matcher, but I'm trying to say that, yeah.
No, that's not about the pieces,
it's about like the inspiration of the houses that you like,
exactly.
And what they made you feel.
My favorite thing to do is to go through these collections and then go on like a thread up or like a secondhand site or something like that, and try to like find a vintage piece that matches what I'm seeing on the runway, because you know, fashion is cyclical. They're recycling these things. So if you look hard enough, you can find something in your price point that will mirror what you're currently seeing on the runway.
Okay, I got you. How about, did you have any other favorites or any ones you want to talk about?
Another one, I definitely have to shout out Teodola, who used to be called Slash by Tia, and it was this really dope brand that specialized in like sheers and ruffles. So they had those like really popular two-piece sets that were almost like a salsa dancer costume. But they actually debuted a collection. It was featured, the video was featured in Vogue, which was really dope. It's called
like the magazine on a website or something, or
the website. Okay. Yeah, their collection movie was featured on Vogue, and the name of the collection, I'm gonna fuck this up, is La Nueva Esbol.
Is that Spanish?
Latin.
Oh, okay.
It is a Latin derivative language. It means the black girl is beautiful.
Oh wow.
And it's really dope. It was a very like Bob Mackie inspired collection, which means sheers, sequins, glitters, feathers, very much like a fantasy, but a little bit more explicit. Not explicit, but it was more revealing, because obviously like the sheer layers and stuff. I just think it's dope. It just reminds me of kind of like fairy tale fashion, and it's really beautiful to see black women, particularly dark skinned black women, in that type of clothing. And shout out to Clea Trapra, funny Instagram. She's from New York. She's a really funny Instagram girl. Save me a baby daddy.
That's not clicking.
Why do niggas breathe?
See.
Anyway, why would that bitches who get it, get it. Exactly. She's mad funny. Also, Flo Milli, if you saw her face, you would know it. Okay. But Flo Milli was also featured as a model in that collection, which I think
I know Flo Milli.
We do know Flo. We do stand
Dicks
Flo
up
Milli.
When I step in a party.
Exactly. We stand a mean girl rapping legend. But yeah, definitely that. So any flops, any collections you are not feeling, jiving with?
I didn't have any. I'm not a hater, so I don't. I'm gonna skedaddle around that question.
You're not a hater. Well, as the podcast resident hater, I definitely had some collections I did not enjoy.
Okay, talk to me.
Particularly the Fendi Couture collection, and which is painful because it was Kim Jones's first collection at Fendi, and I am a Kim Jones stan. I also have really enjoyed Fendi's like ready-to-wear collections. They are just untouchable when it comes to leathers and furs. But this Couture collection was a snooze. And so we're probably going to get into this in a different episode, but there are like specific requirements for a collection to be considered couture. And
can you just give like a quick synopsis real quick?
So basically it's like craftsmanship. Right, like there needs to be like hand done embroidery, beading, the way it's constructed, the like not technicians, but the people who work on it need to have met certain qualifications. Basically meaning like this is beyond wearable. This is a fantasy. This is a basically like an art piece.
Right.
And it's just been the trend. Now that like minimalism is like just the prevailing ethos in fashion, couture collections have been less and less dramatic. And there are certain houses that bring it back, like Valentino, you know, knocks it out of the park. But I was really looking forward to Fendi's collection because they do really excel in leather and fur. So I was hoping that they would bring that into a couture collection, but I think Kim Jones, while his work at Dior is fantastic and it has made Dior extremely popular within like the pop culture lexicon, I do not think he is necessarily talented enough.
So your beef is pretty much it's just like you weren't
stop giving white men all these jobs.
Okay, yeah,
they don't need all these jobs. Like he doesn't even wear. So there's like a so when you are like an official like couture atelier, which is just like the name of the job, you wear a white coat. Wear basically it looks like a lab coat. This motherfucker does not wear a white coat. He's not an atelier. Like. It's not within his resume. He hasn't studied these practices. He has no experiences in these practices. And we understand that he has made another house commercially successful, but that does not mean he's talented enough to handle like a whole other fashion house with its own history and its own needs, especially a couture collection. So stop giving these white motherfuckers jobs.
I have a question though. Is there anybody you felt in terms of like
could do it?
Yeah.
No.
No.
I mean, not. I just can't name someone.
So
off
you
the
have
head.
High standards in terms of couture. Not that high status is a bad thing, but couture
well, it's
is special
couture.
To me.
Okay. Yeah, like it's custom. It's not supposed to be wearable. And there are designers who are very good at making wearable pieces, and obviously they need to be ahead in charge of ready to wear collections, but. Those who do not have the imagination or like the skill set or like the technical ability to be in charge of couture collections don't need to be in charge of couture collections. Right. You motherfuckers, let me not curse these people out. Like I know them, but it just doesn't make sense to me. And it stinks of like, we want profits and you're not supposed to make profits off a couture collection. It's for like literally the 0.01% of the world who can afford to shop a couture collection. They're not looking for a pedestrian.
The part of the 1% that make the 1% feel poor.
Feel broke. Yeah, that show, that Crazy Rich Asian show.
Yeah.
Those motherfuckers are buying couture collections. Yeah, like, and those motherfuckers are not looking for, you know, a slip dress. So, yeah, that was just a little bit
I got you.
Disappointing.
I didn't have any that I hated, but I'll talk about some more that I loved. First, I want to give some props to Acne. I'm starting to realize that I'm becoming an acne stan. Yeah,
down.
Honestly, good.
I got two of them over expensive scarves.
Nah, just because I'm going to keep like spinning about just I'm a person that doesn't do too much, but they do it right. Like their colors is not, it's just like I appreciate the ready to wear craftsmanship, the leather, you know, make sure my materials is right.
And I found that their last ready to wear collection actually wasn't like super minimal. Like there were some variation in the colors and pattern. They had some dope ruching going on. So yeah, Acne knocks it out of the park for me.
And then I also want to give a shout out to Louis Vuitton. You know, we like to give, you know, Virgil's turned into like a meme of a designer, God forbid, but you know, he still does what he does. You know, there's a reason why he's the head of Louis right now. So, you know, the one thing I didn't like, and I'll be vocal about, was the kente cloth that was how, like, you know, like I understand, like you draw inspiration, especially with the movement of Black Lives Matter.
Right.
So you're trying to make, you know, I get it. But to me, it was just like, I guess it wasn't all the kente cloths. It was the one that like that was closely resembled in terms of like the more tribal colors.
Yeah. Cause
there was one, he made one that was like with the navy and silver that was smooth. I didn't even realize it was kente cloth. I was like, oh, I just thought it was like regular LV scarf. But then and you take a closer look and it's just like a little bit kente. And I'm like, okay, that's nice. But then it was just the other one. I don't know.
For me, obviously, like I'm Black American, like so I took issue with it in two ways. One, it felt a little unsettling to put like the Louis Vuitton name on a culturally significant cloth. Like, why couldn't you just make it and then put it on the tag or do it in a subtle way? Like, why did you have to brand this white ass house that does not give a fuck about niggas onto this very important cultural cloth? Like, that felt a little weird to me.
And then I don't know if you saw recently the pictures with him with the MLK.
Yeah, he can go to hell.
Yeah, what the hell?
I understand we're giving this nigga his flowers, but man, nigga, like every time I want to give him his flowers, he does something that makes me want to curse him out. But
I was like, what is MLK doing?
He got too cocky.
Nah, keep that on Off-White, man.
Right, that's what I was saying. It would make more sense for it to be that, to be an Off-White piece. Don't bring that shit to white ass Louis Vuitton.
Like, and that's not us trying to say, let's keep Louis Vuitton whitewashed. Please introduce blackness into Louis Vuitton.
Right.
But there are ways to do it where it doesn't seem feel like
exploited.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like that's what I was saying with my other point. Like, so he had like several different looks that were styled with the kente cloth. I actually really like the looks that were styled with the suits.
Mm-hmm.
It felt really like dignified, but then there was a look that the kente cloth was styled with like a hoodie and some like bootcut jeans.
Yeah.
And that shit felt disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, it would've been nice too, cause especially Coming to America 2 just released. If they did something like, if it was in pair with that, but
cause
it was giving that energy. It's like, okay. Yeah. You know, I guess because that's part of like the inspiration. Just like, you know, the diaspora.
The suit look felt dignified. Like, mm-hmm. I'll give him that for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think if there's anything. No, I mean, those are really, that's at the top of my mind, are the people that I enjoy this season, which is a jumble of everything. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you wanted to say on the topic?
Overall, I just feel like we've seen like a couple of like really dope trends that I'm going to point out, you know, spring, summer, get your closet ready. So what we saw was a prevalence of exaggerated suiting, which has been, you know, the tea for the last couple of years, really.
Mm-hmm.
Corsetry obviously is still a big thing. Fashion is moving towards the 70s and 80s in terms of era references.
Fashion is cyclical.
Yeah, of course. A lot of color blocking. Opera gloves, randomly. I see opera gloves on the runway all the time, which I think is just like a really fun accessory. Layering like sheer material, so like tights as shirts, and then perforated materials. So like perforated materials is basically a fancy word for like fishnets. And then square-toed heels, which goes back to like the 70s and 80s aesthetics. So those are like my favorite trends overall. Mm. You know, it's going to be super easy for people to incorporate these into their closets. If you are a cheap bitch like me, you will go on amazon.com and get you a couple of fishnet dresses and then see what you can do with that. So, you know, have fun with it.
All right. So I think we could button that up and like, let's move on to the next topic.
Okay, so in fashion news, we have two stories that have really been a buzz on social media. First being Andre Leon Talley announces that he is being evicted from his 11-bedroom mansion.
How you feeling? Talk to me.
Okay, so let's first,
before you give us a little synopsis about what happened.
Give us a synopsis of the man and the story, right? Mm-hmm. So Andre Leon Talley is a fashion icon. He is basically credited as being like the first black tastemaker in like fashion journalism. Mm-hmm. So he worked as editor-in-chief at Vogue. He's worked for W Mag. He worked for the New York Times, Women's Wear Daily. His credentials are pretty serious, and he's been a personal stylist for like Mariah Carey, for Michelle Obama. Like, he, you know, look his resume up. It is
He's definitely
pretty extensive. Yeah,
he's that guy.
Yeah. So Andre Leon Talley, and I think it is so funny that one of his credits is being an unpaid intern for Diana Vreeland, which is, Diana Vreeland was the basically the head bitch in charge of Vogue before Anna Wintour was Vogue. Mm. So they make a note of the fact that he is used to working unpaid, which ties into the recent news of the man having financial troubles. And of course, social media reacted because, you know, especially black people are very sensitive to our icons in very whitewashed industries. So what actually happened was, according to the New York Times, Andre Leon Talley was quote unquote late on the rent slash mortgage payment. There is a kind of dispute on what the agreement was. But he's facing eviction from this mansion that was owned by George Malkomis, who actually was the former head of Milano Blahnik, the iconic shoe house. So people were kind of reacting to the fact that this icon of the fashion industry was seemingly having financial troubles. And if you actually, you know, read into the article, you'll see that originally Talley and this George person had an agreement where he was paying a very large amount of rent, essentially, for 2 years. And then eventually after that 2 year contract went out, Andre Leon Talley was making, you know, varied payments, but he was under the impression that he was making payments towards like a mortgage so he could own the house. The George guy was like, no, I've always owned the house. And once Andre Once Andre stopped paying, the guy was basically put up the eviction notice. So in the article, it kind of details the fact that Andre Leon Talley has had this history of being very prevalent in the fashion industry and very respected, but not compensated. Mm-hmm. So they talk about how he's always being gifted things. Like he'll be gifted, you know, custom Chanel bags to wear, and he'll be invited to the front seat of shows, but he's never really compensated, or he's never spoken about being compensated. So it caused, you know, him to have a lot of connections and a lot of respect within the industry, but not a lot of finances to back it up.
Right.
Yeah. So that's basically the long and short of the situation.
Okay. Thank you for giving us that. Now, so let's get into it. Yeah. All right. What I didn't like about this whole story and all whatnot is, like, I feel like, first and foremost, I guess I can't even be too harshly on the people that are trying to get Andre Leon Talley out, is the fact that I guess there wasn't any paperwork, right?
Right.
If there's no paperwork, it's not really much you can say. This is what happens. Mm-hmm. It becomes allegedly this, allegedly that, and it becomes messy. So that's the first move. But my beef is that the reason, I think somewhere in the article they said the reason like they wanted them to move is because aren't they going broke themselves and they're looking for like collateral?
Yeah, they're trying to like liquidate their assets and trying to pull themselves out of financial situation as well.
So if that's the case, man, like how you know that this is a home, right? Of course, it's a extravagant home. I'm not saying that, you know, it's not like the bare minimum of a home, but this is something,
it's not nobody's apartment.
Yeah, it's not an apartment, but this is something that they call their home. And you know, he built, you know, thing, he spends money on landscaping to keep it up,
right?
And now you want to kick him out just because you're broke as well,
right?
And that's part
of, you're siding with Andre.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
In terms of like initially, in terms of, like, there obviously there are different things you can talk about, but just when I was reading that, I was just getting kicked. I'm like, that, like, you can't find some other way to like get the money you're looking for instead of kicking somebody out their home.
Right.
Like, if you want to get official paperwork to actually get some income, so you can say that, okay, I'm going to be paying it. So that's what I didn't like. It's just the fact that they're just trying to kick somebody out their home.
Right.
And, you know, is, you know, people always try to pull up their pants when they feel like they when to make power plays, and it just doesn't sit right in my spirit.
Well,
now, okay, go ahead.
No, finish your point.
And then I was going to go to a different point because I can go, but I'll let you go. Jump.
Okay, so if we're just looking at it strictly from, like, this is an issue with business, I think, like, no one should be going on gentlemen's agreements in 2020. But I think the issue is these are...
Even with your best friend.
Yeah, these are people that come from a different generation where gentlemen's agreements actually held weight.
Yeah,
but
and
when
we're going to talk about, yeah.
Yeah, when you have, like, it's understandable for someone of that age to think that, okay, this is an agreement. You verbally said that if I paid X, Y, and Z on this house, it would be mine, which is fine. But it looks like Andre was not meeting those payments. So
yeah, that's another part that
after
yeah.
like 2 months of a nigga not giving me my bread, I'm going to be looking at him like,
yeah, and that's where I was going
to
go next.
It might be time to pack it up.
Yeah.
But they let him rock for years and years and years.
And exactly like you said, this is like a different era where, okay. And you know, we're going to talk about the racial dynamics behind it, you know,
of course.
Andre being the first and prominent fashion connoisseur,
editor,
essentially.
Tastemaker.
So it's so, I mean, it just like, it shows to it. We live in a capitalist system. Let's just talk about that. Money's always going to be first and foremost, regardless of any relationship, unfortunately, fortunately, however you want to view it. So it's just like, as the old system has always been, and the current system is that we'll push the black culture in the front, but the money's always going to run through the white hands, the white. And I know this is kind of off kilter, but it's just like, this is what happens. Because when they feel like they don't need you anymore, then they're like, okay, let me wash my hands.
They'll
discard
you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So shit like that gets me tight is because, like, I'm sorry. I'm just getting a little
No,
like,
go speak on it.
It's like,
speak on it.
It's like, if you as a black person, if you're a black person, listen to this, you have to like set yourself up where that you don't depend on anybody, regardless of like white, black, yellow.
Don't
you
do
know.
No good faith agreements, especially with the Yakubians
at all, because I promise you, when it, like, you may not think it, but when it inconviences them, you will get discarded.
Like,
you will get discarded because you thought it was gonna be smooth.
Yeah,
like, I try to live my life as good as possible, but that I honestly say it's just I haven't been in a situation where like I had to do something dirty like that. I don't think I'll ever do or treat somebody dirty.
No,
just because
I don't think I can ever displace anyone.
Exactly.
That's fucking wild.
Exactly. I don't think I'll do something like that, but I've never been in that situation, so I can't say 100%. But I know that 95-99% that I wouldn't do some shit like that, but that's just me.
Right.
It's just like, you can't count on everybody to have your
I
back.
Feel like once you touch that type of money that like this,
exactly.
this strata of people are touching, the ethics become secondary. You don't like, honestly, like, I'm gonna play devil's advocate for George Malcolmus.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna play advocate for George. And I think that when you're at that level of like notoriety and income, they honestly probably assume that Andre would he's not gonna be asked out, you know, like, he's not about to be homeless. Like, yeah, he might have to like downgrade his life. But they probably didn't assume that like this was gonna become like a thing, like a social media thing.
Right.
So just in that vein, obviously people's reactions on social media were interesting. On one hand, people wanted to advocate behind Andre. They actually started a GoFundMe, which he was like, first
was
of
like,
all, I'm not broke.
said,
don't disrespect
don't
me, right? You
like,
niggas
me.
Are getting a little too crazy. But
nah,
people,
I respect it. People, let them know they're not broke. He's not broke.
Yeah, like people did want to advocate behind him because he is an icon and he is a very important pioneer. But on the other hand, I saw this take from like a lot of people who are actually within the fashion industry, like Black people specifically. Mm-hmm. They kind of were like, yeah, well, that's what the fuck he gets. Like, yeah. there's kind of like this undermining feeling or of resentment towards Andre Leon Talley, because in being a pioneer, he absolutely enjoyed the benefits of being the token Black creative in the room.
And that's a whole different.
And if we're being honest, until, you know, maybe recently, within the last 10 to whatever years, Andre Leon Talley has never been an advocate for Black creatives or Black designers or anything like that. If anything, you know, he was very supportive of Naomi and Tyra. Well, I'm not even sure really Tyra, but he was very supportive of Naomi, but also Naomi benefited from the tokenism role as well. So a lot of industry people were not as emotionally affected as like a casual fashion enthusiast would be, because they understand that, like, yeah, he was a pioneer, but he was never a champion.
Right.
So why would I advocate for someone who was never interested in advocating for me?
And that's part of exactly why you can't just depend on people. If you're Black, you got to champion other Black people.
Yeah.
You don't have to champion everybody, but you got to make sure you bring other people.
You need to pull someone up.
And it's unfortunate that all the burden is always put on us, but it is what it is. It is the truth.
Right.
Like you said, because sooner or later, it's going to come back to bite you. Yes. And the last thing you want is to try to rely on people you dissed, and now they're like, no.
Right. So, fuck you.
Exactly.
It was a lot of like, well, you know, it was a lot of little shady, you know, commentaries happening in, you know, fashion Twitter. But I will also, again, devil's advocate, he came up in an era where like the type of advocacy that Black creatives do for themselves and each other was just not a thing, like at all. I'm sure he was in a place where he couldn't even fathom advocating for his worth or demanding that he be compensated correctly. Like, I'm sure he was happy to just be in the door, you know? So like, what, like, I'm sure, like, we're talking about, like, let me double check. Let me not age this man too much, but I'm pretty sure we're talking about like the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm. I think
that don't sound right. He's not.
Nah,
that old.
I was about to say
70s, 80s,
70s, 80s, 90s. Yeah.
70s, 80s, 90s. Yeah, he's. Oh, he was definitely in high school in the 60s.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Wow,
60. That's
we're
like
we're talking about the 70s Great Depression, and 80s, no? Guys. Or no. Yeah, this man is not that old. I'm so sorry. But
and
yeah,
don't kill me if I was wrong about the Great Depression. I'm not a historian.
Because
I was thinking about. I was like Great Depression.
This is not a history podcast. Y'all are barely getting the facts on here. You know, we just be saying anything, whatever.
But yeah.
So like, again, for example, Naomi currently is a champion for Black models, particularly for dark skin models, which is dope. It's beautiful. You know, you see the videos of them like crying in her arms all the time, and she's, you know, Mother Teresa of the models, I guess. But that bitch used to be a bitch back in the day. Like, her and Tyra is not innocent either, because that bitch is a psycho as well. But they used to be at each other's necks. Like, Naomi was the gatekeeper for Black fashion models, so she kind of adopted better than Andre did in terms of advocating for other Black creatives in the industry. Right. But, you know, old people are very hesitant to change their ways. So I can't really give him too much flack, honestly.
No, I mean, it is what it is. But just to wrap it up, I feel like, you know, wish him the best of luck. I hope he doesn't get kicked out. I don't want to see that for anybody.
Right. He don't got Karl Lagerfeld to bail him out either, because that man is dead.
Yeah, rest in peace. But yeah, just hopefully, you know, they come to an amicable agreement. Nothing gets crazy.
Get you a nice little apartment in Soho. Yeah, you'll be off. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not really shedding any tears for that man.
All right, got you. Okay, so we can move on to the next topic, and I've been waiting to get to this topic.
I'm excited for you, friend. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. I'm excited. Should I start the Law and Order music?
I don't know. We could probably do some a little editing.
Wait, who's Benson and who's Stabler?
Benson, that's the more aggressive one, right? Yeah, Benson. No, Stabler is the guy. The girl? Yeah, no, Stabler is the guy. But the fact is,
I'm Benson, you're Stabler?
Yeah.
Okay, okay, cool.
And I'm about to take this to, like, because this is a passionate topic for me.
Yeah, Law and okay, Order reseller so crimes. Let's get it.
What we're going to talk about is the, if you guys have been paying attention to social media, the resell saga, you want to call it, or, you know.
It is a saga.
It's a saga.
Because
I really hope this changes something. But I don't know if you've been paying to anything. If you've been paying to social media, you know, you've been seeing a lot of people talk about West Coast streetwear and how Bloomberg News wrote an article. Bloomberg wrote an article about how, you know, this sneaker guy or kid, whatever you want to call him, was booming.
Snot-faced
and
kid.
Then, you know, they want to drop the bombshell that led to, oh, and did you know that his mom was VP of Nike?
Surprise,
Stop the music. Okay. Listen. So.
Give us a background. Give us the play-by-play.
Let me, because I got a lot to say. So let me open up this article real quick just so I can just, you know
right,
what to
we
hit.
We get our facts right on this one.
Big
gonna,
facts.
We gonna.
So you want to start by saying that the person, Joe Herbert.
Government name, Joe Herbert.
That's West Coast streetwear. And then his mother, I think, is Hannah Herbert.
Herbert.
Yeah, we're gonna call it Hannah, even though it's not. What you call it? This article's title is called "Sneakerheads Have Turned Jordans and Yeezy into a Bonafide Asset Class." Right? You know, the stock market has been like an interesting topic. So I see the angle that Bloomberg was trying to take. You know, let's talk about other asset classes that people are getting into with crypto coins. Let's talk about how
NFTs.
Yeah,
I know what that is.
Yeah, look at you showing off. let's talk about how like sneakers have become a classic. I'm like, cool, boom. You know, I understand it. You know, I particularly don't participate in resale culture. I hate resale culture. But you know, that's interesting, right? They talk about how this guy, he started his business, I think, in 2018. It was like West Coast streetwear first, and what he started that business was that he noticed that he will find Supreme pieces and he'll be able to flip it for like 2x, 5x the original sale price. So eventually it turns, it continues to grow. The business now is becoming more orientated towards sneakers. And how he goes about purchasing sneakers is, and why I really don't like resale sneakers, because it's one thing if you do it organically, you wake up, you know, you click multiple times, you buy as many purchases as you want.
Right, you in the trenches with
everyone
else.
Yeah, cool. You did the hard work. But what these resellers have been doing, and because it's not new, what they've been doing is that they will they get bots that you know all you have to do is load the credit card information, because they're not using real money, because and the bot will take care of it. It will like
check out automatically.
It'll check out as many purchases as it can, because you know these sneaker companies, they try to make it to one purchase per company, but the bots have a workaround that. So pretty much all you do is you put the credit card information, you wait till 10 o'clock hits, and then boom, you have what
for this
1,200 pairs of sneakers.
Sneaker illiterate. It's basically what was happening last year with the Telfar bags.
Yeah, pretty much with the Telfar bags. So that's what happened, because they saw that Telfar was becoming valuable. So they was like, oh, let's crack this shit with the bots. And they used the bots to purchase the Telfar bags. So that's what that was, right? So that's been a thing. And usually the hype is what makes, I guess, a bot user want to go after a sneaker.
Right.
But what Joe Herbert was doing that was more, I guess, you know, people don't talk about more, or like if you're in sneakers, you understand, is that he was targeting bricks. And what a brick is that so a sneaker company has like a shoe they wanted to sell. It didn't sell. So it's been sitting on the shelves. So how do you get the shoe off your shelfware? You discount it. And then when you discount it, you know, you're trying to attract people. So what Joe was doing was that he knew when these discounts were coming. He claims never with his mother's information, just because he lived in Oregon, but somehow some way he knew that.
And what was the mother was the VP of
Nike, of North America.
Overall.
Yeah.
Okay, so the
and
mom
also
was
she was the one that pushed Nike from going away from brick and mortar to going towards
to
online
sales.
Oh,
so this bitch complicit.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah, lock her ass up,
like,
too.
I blame her, but I'm not going to put the full blame on her.
I am. Lock her ass up.
No, we're going to talk about it. But, so, where was I? Yeah, so he was aiming for bricks, and when the shoes discounted, what now? How do you make the money? Is that you sell it for retail, right? Mm-hmm. Because you knew normally they were going to sell it for a discount, but no, you sell it for retail or above retail if it's certain shoes. You know, it depends on what you use. So right. He was making money that way, and so basically he was just he hit up Bloomberg to talk about, okay, this is my business, this is what we do,
right,
and we want to show off.
Mind you, we want to emphasize the fact that this motherfucker
volunteered. Nobody asked him. Word, you looking for acid class? Let me tell you,
let me talk to legal doing. Let me start my clubhouse chat.
Exactly. And then so where it gets interesting is that, you know, the what's the name of the author of this article? I'm sorry. Joshua Hunt. He was doing his, you know, due diligence as a journalist. You making sure. And he realized that one time he got a call from Joe. And instead of Joe's name popping up, the name Hannah, did we figure out her real name? I'm sorry. I'm still going to go with Hannah.
Her name's Hannah now.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Hannah Herbert. He was like, who the hell is this? And then Joe picked up. And then later on, he was looking at credit card statements that West Coast Streetwear showed Bloomberg to prove, like, the money he was making.
The lady's name is Ann.
Oh, Ann. But I'm going to call her Hannah for the rest of
Hannah.
Hannah, but her name is Ann. Shout out, Ann. But so on a credit card statement, it was attached to his mother's name.
Right.
And then in doing his due diligence, he looked up. He was like, wait, Ann Everett? You mean the one that worked at Nike? The VP, the one that pushed for digital?
Went on LinkedIn.
So I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but you can see where ethics, morale, and all that stuff coincide.
Right.
Now, in reaching out to Nike said that they were made aware of, you know, the business. But my thing is, I think they were made aware when it was 2018, when it was streetwear, when it wasn't really sneakers. So it was like, oh, cool, sell, you know, your little Supreme shirts or Bape shirts. That's cool with me.
Right.
And then as, I guess, Ann progressed, she became more prominent in making these. Like I said, she was part of the push towards making direct to consumer versus bricks and mortar. So
I have a slight question.
Go ahead. Uh-huh.
The sneakers app,
right,
owned by Nike.
Yeah, that's created by Nike. That's part of the push.
She
look, man, the resale game is dirty, man. It really is, because let's talk about how, like, they'll tell you that it's all these pairs available, but they already sold the pairs before they even go. Right. They like what you guys, I don't know if you're into sneakers, you already know, but if you're not, what they do is, like, these stores, they will be like, okay, we have 5,000 pairs of shoe. I mean, 5,000 pairs of shoes to sell, but in reality, they already sold 3,000 before the shoe launched.
Okay.
So now it's really just 2,000, and the hype is for 5,000. So it's right off the bat, you're already going to get people.
You're already down bad.
You're already down.
Question.
Go ahead.
Does Nike sell new releases exclusively on the sneaker app or through other avenues as
so
well?
That's what I'm trying to say. They were doing, so the old system was, well, okay, we have this whole, we'll sell wholesale to, like, Foot Locker,
right,
to, like, Foot Action, all these, right, different variations of the foot, and then and then we'll get the money that way.
Okay.
But now they're like, oh, we don't even need to go through Foot Locker. We'll just sell them directly through our app. That way, you know,
middleman,
all the cash is towards us.
Right.
Cool. You know, that's a business model. You got to adapt with the times. Everything is technology. I'm not mad. I am mad at that. But yeah. So because of this more push to technology, that's what bots created. Because they're like, oh, we could gain the system. We don't need to talk to the manager beforehand. It's just easier for me to create this bot that's going to give me 1,200 pairs of sneakers.
And just be on GitHub.
And all I got to do is just be sipping my morning tea in the morning.
I cannot wait till black people figure out what GitHub is.
Yes, please. Because this shit is getting me tight.
All the programmers, we're talking to you.
I'm ranting, but let me just wrap up the article itself. So eventually, I don't even know where I was, but eventually, the article gets out. Nike's like, oh, damn, you were selling sneakers too? I'm sorry, deuces to you.
Right.
And all because this man wanted a clout.
So she specifically was released because of the scandal.
Yeah, okay. I would assume that, because that's the only thing that makes sense.
Again, because she didn't do anything wrong, like, in terms of,
yeah, we're gonna just go off the assumption that she was released based off of that.
Hopefully she was.
Yeah, hopefully she was. But the point is, first and foremost, clout will kill you. Don't ever do anything for clout,
because
there's no reason why you should be showing
up. Nigga really fucked up the bag. Like, okay, him being a horrible human being aside, bitch, you really fumbled the bag.
Just,
like,
because, and mind you, he was clearing $200,000 a month, guys. 200K. If we do the math, 200K times. No, that's a good month. I'm not even going to. Let's just say 100K. Right. 100K per month for 12 months. That's 1.2 million in a year.
He got his clearing off his sneakers. In these pics,
and
you know?
If you go on his Instagram, he cleared all his. He doesn't have his face highlighted because he knows it's illegal. Like, yeah. This shit is like.
Lock that nigga up.
And you do this just because you want people to write about you. And not even getting to the fact that, you know, he started a cook groups, and what a cook group is, you know, you get a bunch of people and we're like, okay, we're going to use all our bots and together and it's going to either go to one person or it's going to be shared spoils just for a certain period.
So I was going to ask, cook groups, basically whoever bot is the best, they divide.
No, they all have bots. Bots. Like
I understand, but if you're in a cook group and say like one person's bot gets the vast majority of whatever, are they splitting those?
That's what I'm trying to say.
Items?
So it depends on the agreement of the group. Is it that we're going to band together and give all the shoes to this guy because he's going to give us money and we don't need to worry about selling it? Or are we going to split the spoils? It's just like we're bombing the site together and how many pairs we get. Because what you need to, you can't send all these shoes to a location. You have to send it to a warehouse. So it goes to a warehouse and that's where it's stored.
Okay.
Yeah, because then they resell on like StockX or like hand to hand, whatever.
Ooh,
yeah.
StockX.
Yeah, so that's how that goes. So it's just like, and he started a.
Hey, Tone here. Unfortunately, that's how we have to end the episode this week. Post recording, we had a little technical difficulties, which led to losing the remaining. Portion of the podcast. Thank you for listening. We apologize for this inconvenience, but we felt like this episode was a good episode, and we didn't want to just keep it in the vault and then have to delay it a couple weeks. So I'm sorry I had to end this way. If you like this episode, please leave a review. It's very important. Please rate us. And hopefully this is the last time something like this will happen. Thank you for bearing with us. Don't forget to follow us on social media. My handle is Tone Bone, TONE B0NE on Instagram. And it's Tone Bone as well, spelled the same way, except instead of a period, it's a underscore for my Twitter handle. And make sure to follow our podcast page at Sample Size Pod on both Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to check us out, our website where we have episodes and we'll be updating you on news is samplesizepodcast.com. Thank you once again for listening. Sorry that it had to end this way, but we promise that we'll make it up for the next episode. All right, see you.